This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Ryan, we got a special guest today. Who've we got?
Our guest today is communication expert Lisa B. Marshall. Lisa delivers consulting and workshops. She's the author of Smart Talk and Ace Your Interviews, and she is the host of the Public Speaker and Smart Talk podcasts. Lisa wrote an article in the February 2017 edition of the Toastmaster magazine entitled The Snackification of Communication. Lisa B. Marshall, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you, Ryan and Greg. It's been a long time coming. I'm very excited to be here.
I have to admit, when I saw the title of your article, not only did it make me hungry, but it really aroused my curiosity. Snackification of communication. What is snackification?
It's actually a food and dining trend. It was identified, I think, in 2012 by a marketing research firm that specializes in the consumer culture. And what they noticed is that we are, as a nation, snacking more. We're having more frequent intake of food and having fewer traditional meals.
What does snackification have to do with communication?
Well, I was walking one morning and I was listening to a podcast, and they had on the CEO of Evernote, and he was talking about how he believed that snackification was impacting his software development. And I was like, what? He said, well, you know, when you interact with a computer, it's several hours. When you interact with your phone, it's, you know, timed in minutes. And when you interact with your watch, it's seconds. And so that they had to learn to program differently, to think about how people are interacting in these smaller, more interactive, transactional communications. And in this case, software communications. And I thought to myself, oh, that's exactly what we're facing in our day-to-day communication. At work, we have requests for shorter and shorter programs. We see people asking for Q&A sessions, at least in my own business. I see at my clients fewer and fewer meetings, more and more texts, more and more communication that's very short and transactional.
And so what's the result of this trend, Lisa? I'm going to ask you the question that I know is the wrong question to ask, but is this a good thing or is it a bad thing?
It's both. Of course, it's both. I think that certainly having snackified communication, having these shorter transactional communications, is good at some level. I can say that I know from experience, I used to have au pairs in our house. So these were, you know, 20-somethings who would regularly have their friends come and pick them up. And I always was amazed, how do you know to run outside at this particular moment? She's like, oh, Lisa, of course, they're telling me, they're texting me. And I'd say, well, you know, why don't you have them come in so I can, no, they don't want to meet you. I'm like, okay. Like the father, you know, the date doesn't want to meet the father, is afraid to find out what's going on. So they'd rather just text outside. And from a transactional standpoint, I get that. You know, I want to talk to my friend. I want to find out a certain time. I'll say to her, hey, how about 6 o'clock? Much, much faster to text and make it convenient for her to respond when she gets a chance to respond. But on the flip side, what we see is that because of the transactional nature, because it is this quick communication, we're also losing the ability to understand another person's emotions or to be empathetic to another person. There's both pluses and minuses, I'd say.
I was thinking of the point where you're trying to text in, and I think on the international website there's a little video there, and they were talking about, you know, texting inside. The date is texting inside to his state because he doesn't want to meet the father, doesn't want to meet the mother. I mean, isn't that a little bit of a cop out?
Yeah, of course it's a little cop out. Yeah, they don't want to meet. But I think again, I mean, it's because it's faster and quicker. They don't want to, you know, it's born out of maybe partly laziness. You know, people don't want to get up and have to get out of the car and go to the door. They don't want to have those kinds of conversations. But even if you don't even look at it from that perspective, just, you know, you want to create a plan for somebody or create a plan with somebody, so much easier just to text, just to get the information quickly. Sometimes frankly. You don't want to have a conversation. You don't want to have a long preamble and postamble. You just want the meat. You just want the transaction. And for those conversations or those communications that's just transactional, then I say, sure, why not? Go ahead and have that kind of communication.
I guess it makes sense where you've got specific information. So if you're trying to convey a date, a time, a waybill number, some sort of specific information that has to be taken verbatim, obviously, I think that would be very efficient and very effective.
Right. I mean, think of it this way. If your text is one text on one side, one text on the other, or one or two texts from the one side and then one or two from the other side, that probably was an efficient use of using the text. If it ends up being this long, drawn out conversation, you know, sometimes that happens where you just go back and forth and back and forth. Pick up the phone. Why are you doing that? I just think that, I mean, that's when we can think about, well, when does it make sense to stop texting and actually have an in-person communication?
I was thinking sometimes it could end up with getting something like text bloating. And perfect example is I'm mentoring an individual for their speeches. And it's like, okay, I got a quick question. Can I just send you a text? Or I have a quick question. Here's a text. And then that ends up being with back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And all of a sudden, when you're looking back through the thread, I'm thinking, OMG, right? This could have been resolved either with a couple of emails or perhaps just a quick 2-minute conversation, but it kind of went on forever, forever, forever. And at that point, it's taking 3 times, 4 times longer. So in that respect, the snackification is almost like, okay, you're snacking a little bit all day in place of meals. And sometimes the doctors say that's a good thing, but it ends up happening is you end up consuming more calories. And at the end of the day, you're almost worse off than when you started.
Exactly. Just before you called, I had someone call me and ask about an interview, and they had sent me a couple of emails asking about the interview, asking if they could set up an interview. And of course I get so many requests. I just can't respond to everything, and it gets lost in my barrage of communication. And I never responded to the guy, but he said to me, he said, "Oh, I read your book. And I know from your book that you like people to pick up the phone and actually have a conversation." And so He got my attention by actually phoning me, having the request verbally, and we set up before the end of the call. We set up the time of the interview. We had all the information exchanged. I sent out my bio. Everything was done in less than 3 minutes. I guarantee you most of the time, even our interaction going back and forth was longer than that because it was via text or email.
Agreed.
Yeah, interesting. You know, it's funny too. I'm thinking about this. There's an interesting phenomenon when people are texting, and it's supposed to make things more simple and to the point. But what happens sometimes, I think, is what happens when you send a text and you don't get an immediate response? Maybe the person had been responding, and then all of a sudden there's silence, and the imagination starts to
exactly.
work.
Where did they go? Did I get them angry, or did something happen? Did they walk away? What happened that now they're not talking to me? And usually, of course, you go right to, oh, I must have said something wrong. Oh, there must be a problem. And then you start fretting about it.
Right.
If you just had the conversation, you would have known, oh, I have to go. My daughter's here.
Exactly. Yeah. But instead it's, oh, I shouldn't have said that, or I asked a stupid question. They think I'm an idiot now.
Exactly.
When what happened was the battery died.
Yeah, or that.
Right. The last interview we did was with someone who puts on a storytelling series similar to The Moth, if you guys are familiar with The Moth from
NPR. Yeah,
I
love it.
I was at a Moth main stage event, and was before it started trading some texts from a guy from my Toastmasters club. And I mentioned, oh, by the way, I'm at the Moth downtown right now. And he wrote back and said, oh, I'm actually a block away. I'm on my way there too. And so we ended up meeting up for drinks after the event. If it weren't for that ability to just send quick messages back and forth, I would have never known he was there, and we wouldn't have connected.
Exactly.
And I probably would have got to bed a lot earlier that night. I did. But that's okay.
Right.
I've led a sheltered life. Tell me what The Moth is.
Oh, it's a live storytelling from the stage. So people from all aspects of life will stand up and tell a story without notes, true story, and they're usually either humorous or emotional. And if you haven't listened to them, it's absolutely one of the best ways to learn how to be an effective storyteller.
Is it an acronym or is it just a word relating to something?
It's actually the guys who started it were sitting on their porch and they're trying to come up with a name, and they were in the South and there was a moth bothering them. So they decided to call it the moth. I think that's the story I had heard.
Yeah, I heard a similar story, Lisa.
I like it. Let's go with it.
Lisa, do you think there's a risk for people? I'm thinking especially the younger generation that's so tapped into this snackified communication, of losing vital communication skills. I'm thinking things like the ability to pick up the phone and make a phone call, or to have a difficult conversation with someone face-to-face as opposed to hiding behind a mobile device.
Even a job interview.
Are people losing skills? Is that the question? Absolutely. In fact, they look at the younger generation. If you ask even teachers of sixth graders, seventh graders, eighth graders, they can say that the students are less emotional, less in touch with the feelings of their fellow students. And so one group actually from UCLA back in 2014, they wanted to see if they could somehow change this. Could they improve the ability of the students by taking away their digital devices? So what they did is they sent the kids to camp for 5 days, and it was one of these digital device-free camps. So they had to do everything in person. The way the research was is that they had them look at pictures and videos to see what was happening. They wanted them to identify the emotions that were in the picture or in the video. Then they sent them to the camp, half them to the camp and half not to the camp. Then they retested them. And they were able to, the ones that went to camp, to significantly improve their scores on their ability to not only see it in pictures, but also see it in video. So they were able to read facial emotions better. They were able to read other nonverbal cues better. They just were significantly improved. So yes, absolutely, we are losing skills. And that's why I say that it should be a healthy balance. Yes, we're going to have snackified communication. And the more we move in this generation, there's more and more of that snackified communication. But we should balance that with the digital holidays. We should balance that with phone-free events. If you guys know Chappelle, he's a comedian. He has events now where it's phone free. You come in. In fact, he was using a device. It's like a sleeve. You put your phone in a sleeve and it locks it down, and you cannot get to your phone while it's locked down. If you need to make a call or use your phone, you can go out to a station and you put the phone, the sleeve by the station, and it'll unlock, and then you can use your phone out there. Like in the old days, we had to go to the payphone to use the phone. Same idea.
Right.
The article talks about communication, but from what you're describing, it's not only just communication skills, but I think it's social skills as well.
Absolutely. To me, social skills are communication skills. They're one and the same. You need to be able to demonstrate presence and warmth and power and clear, concise messages at all times. Whether that's, you know, via text or whether that's in person, all those things go together in my mind.
Is the snackification itself, do you see this as a trend? Is this the new email or the new phone call? Or do you think it's a fad? I think it's passing.
Well, if you look at research, they say that shorter communication, more communications are not a trend, that it's been happening for quite a while, that it's been creeping up on us, and it's been happening for so many years and increasingly getting more and more. So they do not believe it's a trend. I don't know personally because I didn't do the research, but I could say that I would agree with that I think that in my own life, I observe it being more and more snackified.
Lisa, I want to quote from your article for a second here. You say in your article, so how do you gain attention and ensure that your message resonates? You make it informal and appealing so it's easy to consume. A communication snack uses short sentences. It uses contractions, emoticons, and image stickers to create colorful, casual messages. And it's exactly this appealing, fun, authentic voice that can be quite compelling. The reason I quoted that is I read that and it made me think, do we need to now become entertainers in a sense in order to have our message heard? Do we need to just, even with a simple transactional text in order to break through the noise and get some cooperation, let's say in the workplace, do we need to almost put on a little bit of a show so that our request will be worthy of response? Am I misreading you, or how would you break that down?
I do believe that we are seeing more and more communication. So we're having more times where we're communicating with people. Like I said, I get so many emails. I'm sure you get a ton of email. You get a ton of texts, especially if you're working in an environment that has some sort of messaging or project system that uses texting or uses text messages built into it. You're receiving so many messages that sometimes it is hard to be seen above the clutter. And so if you want to be heard, again, just like in-person communication, if you want to be heard and if you want to persuade others, then it's necessary to demonstrate. Remember I said before, it's demonstrate the presence, to demonstrate warmth, to demonstrate the power all at the same time. And so in order to do that, I think that we sometimes have to use more creative messaging to do that. I'll give you an example. My daughter the other day needed something from her teacher. She's 12 years old, and she is at that phase where she doesn't want to upset her teacher. She wants to be the good student. And so she wanted to send something to her teacher, but it was in essence a demand. She was asking her for something which the teacher should have done before. She said to me, "Mom, how do I ask her? How do I be demanding and still make her like me?" And so she wrote this short little message. And at the end, she added a heart and a smile face. I said, why did you put a heart and a smile face? She's, "Oh, that'll soften the message. She'll know that I'm not being mean." And although that's a silly example, I think that that's really how people are using emoticons to express the warmth, to soften messages, because we don't have the visual cues that we would have in person. I think, of course, it's better to have those in-person communications, but if you've got to do it in a short text or a short message, then we have to make them so they can get through, and that people not just get through, so that people will hear them and be persuaded. If the teacher thought that she was being demanding, she may not get her whatever it is that she was asking for, right? If the teacher perceives her as just being this sweet little girl requesting something, then she might get it.
That's a fantastic example. It is a simple example, but it really illustrates what I think you're trying to say here. And even though, okay, it's a little stupid heart icon that comes loaded onto your device, I can just see the difference of getting those two different messages and having that little expression of warmth does make a little bit of a difference as the person receiving the message.
Absolutely.
Oh, I agree. I was just thinking as we're speaking, the emoticon itself is actually snackification in its purest sense.
Absolutely.
Because you could imagine having someone try to convey the smiley face and a heart in a long email, or just picking up the phone call and saying three words, hugs, hugs, et cetera, hanging up the phone. It just wouldn't work.
But see, as the teacher, she probably felt like, oh, like whatever your daughter's name is, she's a sweetheart and she must like me. The fact that she put a heart is a, you know, an expression of warmth towards me. So I definitely see that as giving, I'll call it a competitive edge, you know, to your daughter and having her message.
I do want to say one caveat though.
Yeah.
That I think in professional communication, we need to be cautious with using smile faces and hearts and emoticons. I think in those cases, what I'm referring to is more about explicitly stating emotion. So, for example, you get something and you think, "Oh, are they angry or are they just busy?" So instead of just reacting and going off, we talked about before how our mind goes reeling. Instead, ask. Just simply respond back. "Oh, did I say something that upset you? Is there something wrong? Is there something that I missed?" If you ask a question back, you'll alleviate that emotional mismanagement, so to speak. And so I think in a work environment, I'm not suggesting hearts and hearts and smile faces. What I'm suggesting is explicit statement of emotion. I think that's a little bit different.
I was going to say, there's also a bit of a risk too, depending on the technology that people are using. So depending if somebody is sending it, for example, through Skype on a computer to a phone that perhaps might be antiquated, you might end up getting the autocorrect syndrome. What shows up at the other end probably may not even be an emoticon. It might just be letters or something, or it may not even translate properly to begin with. So you also got to be careful with that type of snagification.
Even the same emoji on, say, an Apple iPhone compared to an Android device can look different. And there are, I don't know if I should call them studies, but at least articles that I've read that show that users will interpret them differently based on what device they're seeing the icon on, or even on the same device. There's one, for example, that's supposed to be a grinning face, according to Apple, but it looks like a grimace. A lot of people interpret it as a grimace, like, oh, this person's mad or I've annoyed them. But that's not what the emoji is supposed to be.
There won't be any hearts between Android and Apple, Ryan. hope that there will be, but think about it.
Right. So I want to ask you, Lisa, I imagine some people are listening to this saying, oh, come on, this is just too much. I'm not going to turn into a clown to try to get people's attention, or I can't stand texting and everybody glued to their phones and the devices and blah, 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 blah. What risk is there for people who, and this is a legitimate option, who choose not to adapt to this new form of communication and who just say, I'm not going to participate. I'm going to do things the old way.
I think that there's a risk if you're trying to communicate, or if it's important for you to communicate with the generation that communicates that way, or with people, I shouldn't say even the generation, just with people that communicate that way. As in all communication, you should be creating your communication so that it's best for the audience that's getting your message. You should be always thinking about, how can I make this message the most suitable, the most persuasive for the particular audience that I'm communicating with? And so if you are talking to someone that communicates that way, you're at risk at seemingly out of touch. You're at risk of seeming that you don't really understand what it's like to communicate with that kind of person. So I think that's important. Just like, you know, any communication, we should learn how to communicate in all ways and adjust our communication the best we can for the person we're communicating with. You know, think of it this way. If you're, let's say you're a person over 50 and you're trying to get a job interview. If you're not using at some level some forms of short communication in order to network, in order to meet other people, in order to get further along, or even as you're communicating with the person, with the, you know, the recruiter, or with the person, your hiring manager, if you're not communicating successfully with them, if let's say that recruiting manager uses texts totally, they don't want you to communicate, they don't want you to pick up the phone, then you're not communicating in a way that's best for them, and you may be skipped over. And I've seen it. I've seen people get skipped over because they seem out of touch.
Yeah, I can certainly see that. It could also send out a message that perhaps you're not open to new things.
Right. You're not open to new things. You're not willing to learn new things. And especially in the job environment, they want people who are nimble and fresh and able to pick up new things and new technologies and new ways of thinking. I mean, that's what they want. They don't care about the age per se. They want the sort of the mental age. Yeah, I mean, even myself, I didn't have a cell phone for quite a long time. And so I remember when my friend used to tell me, you know, send me texts. And I was like, well, I don't even have a text on my phone plan. And this wasn't that many years ago. And I realized that I was becoming out of date, that I wasn't able to communicate even with people that were my own age. Right? I wasn't able to do it effectively because that's the way she preferred to be communicated with. And she was the reason why I actually went and got a phone that I could text with and added it to my plan, because that's the way she wanted to be communicated with. And she was my best friend since childhood. And then I was going to do what was best for her.
Sometimes people need to find a reason to adopt new technology or to a new way of doing things.
Well, you know, I think to bring it back to Toastmasters, even a real simple example, sometimes we have people who will visit a club meeting or even join a club and they don't have email and don't do internet either, except, you know, maybe they'll go on a couple times a year or something like that. Certainly at our club, we accommodate those people, and I'm sure lots of other clubs do as well, but it puts a higher burden. So instead of delivering the newsletter via email, this person, we mail the newsletter with a stamp. And instead of the person logging onto the internet and signing up for meeting roles or responding to an email saying, hey, can I be Toastmaster? This person would need to call the VP of Education, or the VP of Education would need to call them to schedule a speech.
Right. I was in Toastmasters and finished the CTM. Now, of course, that's the old designation, but I was the VP of Education in, I don't know, mid-80s, 85, 86. And that's the way we did everything. I created the newsletter by hand. If somebody wanted to do a speech, I called them on the phone and we put them on a piece of paper, a schedule. That's the way it worked. I mean, nobody had email. Nobody had anything electronic. Again, I understand that you have to make accommodation for people. But what happens is let's say, you know, the opportunity. Let's say you have a last minute opening and that somebody would like to fill it. If that person has to get it in the mail, or if you can send out a text that says, hey, there's a last minute opening. Well, that person's going to lose out because they didn't see the text. They didn't see it in time. They didn't see the opportunity in time. You lose opportunity if you don't choose to participate. I'm not saying you have to recognize that, you know, for every decision you make, there's a consequence to that decision. And if you can live with that, so be it. Fine by me.
And I think to reinforce your point, again, it all comes back to balance. In order to be to have sort of the best opportunities, let's take advantage of these new technologies and new ways of communicating, but let's also stay very much in touch with the ability to have a face-to-face, eyeball-to-eyeball, voice-to-voice conversation with another warm human being.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do think that. I think it is all about balance. So for those that are on the end of the spectrum that aren't using any sort of technology, so maybe they expand and use one form of technology. And for those that are constantly on their phone, never looking up, never having in-person conversations, I say, hey, take some digital holidays. Make sure that you're spending in time or in-person time with the people that are important to you.
So again, whichever end of the spectrum you're on, maybe take an opportunity to have a little snack, take a few bites, try it. You might like it. Lisa, you've certainly given us some food for thought.
Oh, I knew you'd go in there.
Insert groan noise.
Yeah. Perhaps you can let us know if people want to find out more about what you do and a little bit more about the topic. How can they reach you?
They can reach me via my website at lisabmarshall.com.
So Lisa, you are actually a fellow podcaster as well. Can you tell us a little bit about your former podcast, The Public Speaker?
Primarily, it talks about things related to public speaking, but it's broader than that. It also covers things like interviewing skills or social media skills or even charisma and even questions from young kids. For example, I had one kid ask me, how could he become the class president? He was in sixth grade. It's really any questions that people have on communication skills. There's over 350 some odd episodes. And it's a great way to get some, as they say, quick and dirty tips, because that's the website. It's quickanddirtytips.com. And then you can find the podcast there, The Public Speaker.
And Lisa, I understand you're working on another book right now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I'm so excited because just today I got email from my editor that said, woohoo, she's done the final edits. Yay! So that means that the new book, it's an update to my book, Ace Your Interview. This one has a new name. It's called Red Duck Interviewing. So yes, you're probably wondering, what does red ducks have to do with interviewing? Imagine a red duck sitting amongst a bunch of yellow ducks. That visual image should be enough. So that is the new book. It's coming out so soon. I'm hoping in the next month or so, it will actually be out and available via the bookstores. But I'm so excited just from my side that it's actually finished. Yay!
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for joining us on the show today, Lisa. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I really had a lot of fun. Thanks, Ryan and Greg. I really appreciate you inviting me.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.